right here, so. Oh, we topped it. Whoa. Cold topped it.
Okay. Gotta get up. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined by Mark and Kevin, and introducing from Durham, Newcastle, the 2021 EuroPro star, Mr. Wayne Feeney.
Yes,
Bob. Brilliant. How are you, Wayne?
Yeah, I'm good. Good to see you both.
Good to have you on, mate.
What's it been, 12 years?
It's got to be 10, 12 years, hasn't it?
Probably longer for me, yeah.
Yeah, but it actually really just feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
So the same with Scotty last week. It just felt like I was just speaking to
my room. That was mad seeing Scotty because he hasn't aged a day.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't.
I was just saying then, neither have you.
I take that. 33, I feel every day of it.
You're another one of our MySco friends, aren't you, Wayne?
Yeah.
We go way, way back, the three of us.
Them were the days, good times, MySco.
We need to have a reunion, really, don't we? A proper, just all get together and play golf.
Definitely, it'd be good.
Definitely. Bogey Boys Golf Day, all over that.
Yes.
That is coming next. That is coming in 2021. Speaking of 2021, you've got your Euro Pro Tour card for next year, haven't you, Wayne?
Yeah. Bit of a surprise. I went to go through qualifying. I had a fallout with golf a few years ago after turning pro. I had a slow start and, it's not easy trying to get through professional golf from them ranks of EuroPro and the financial costs. But knowing if I got through qualifying this year, qualifying's in October for your first tournament, end of April, start of May. So I knew if I could get through qualifying, I had plenty of time to really dial myself in and get sort of tournament ready. It's all really good, well and good, being able to scrape together a few rounds around par, couple under, but you see with these guys that some of them can go really low week in, week out, so you need to be in a good frame of mind to play tournament golf and hit some big numbers under par to compete. Otherwise you won't get anywhere,
Just speaking on the, I was going to go back and do your whole journey, but just speaking on the EuroPro now.
Yes.
Do you reckon the October qualifying helped you a little bit, whereas obviously people aren't going to be going as low as if the weather's perfect?
Absolutely. That was the main thing, because it sort of got us in the frame of mind where if you think about it, for people that were going to go to qualify in April as it normally would be, they would have to pretty much prepare themselves through the winter to be tournament ready, knowing if they qualify within weeks after they're in the tournaments. And that's a lot of time, a lot of cost to potentially not even qualify.
Yeah.
And that, to me, would add a lot of pressure for these guys where, your calendar year will really change whether you qualify or not for what you're doing week in, week out, whether you get a full card, half card, or for some guys that don't qualify, but they've given 5-6 month hard preparation to do that. But I think it sort of took the pressure off, which if I didn't qualify, I was still just going to go about doing what I'm doing, me working day. And then, but if
you're
I qualified,
have to win it anyway, weren't you?
Yeah. So that took a lot of the pressures off, knowing that my full preparation for tournament play was only going to start if I qualified, whereas people would have to put that frame of mind on well before the actual qualifying in a normal year.
Yeah.
And I think that 100% helped me get through, because even now I'd said I'd put two good rounds at the Players Club to qualify, but I knew I wasn't ready to go in the tournaments in 3 weeks' time, So I was pleased to get through, but then I had that time up for 5 months or so now still to...
You're preparing for, don't you?
Yeah, and I know what I'm preparing for. I know when my first tournament's going to be. I was meant to start with my new coach, Steve Bainbridge, this week, but obviously that's unfortunately been put on hold for 4 weeks minimum for now. So there's other things we'll be working on in the meantime to make sure I'm be ready for that.
No, it's exciting to see you, Jane. You mate, I can't wait to... Can't wait to see how it goes, and good luck with that. Mm-hmm. Moving back then, so obviously this is the professional route part five that we're doing now. Wayne's a professional golfer. We obviously, the idea of these episodes is to get some insight into your journey. We know where you're at now and where your future's heading, but it's good for us to understand how you got to that point. So taking you back to the beginning, obviously, what was the reasons you got into the game of golf?
My getting into golf was probably different to a lot of the lads, certainly that we'll know through my school, and I don't know what it's for yourselves, but there was no golfers in my family before me. We moved house to the Hobson Golf Club. It's just a municipal course at County Durham, and there was at the back side of the golf club was basically on the back of our houses. So it was the typical when I was, I think, 11 or 12, you'd have a rusty 7-iron and a couple of balls, and you'd jump the fence, you know, at the night.
We're hearing this a lot, aren't we? People just jumping fences and playing. I've done the exact same thing.
That's when golf was the best and the most fun, wasn't it? When you just bumping a few holes and then legging.
Yeah,
exactly. And then every now and then you'd get a chase. It was exciting. It made you...
None of this 18-hole shite that you're doing now.
Nah, it's no good. Yeah, and it backed onto two back-to-back par threes that you could just go in a little circle. And that's where it all started for me and one of my mates. And sort of after that, it come up to the Christmas. And I was like, I want a set of golf clubs. And I think at the time, I'm sure it was £40 a year membership at the club. And I had a set of Memphis Pros. Woeful. But that was my first ever set of clubs, and so I joined that golf club as a junior. And I think I always remember when you fill your first three cards in, and as a typical junior, you never fill in an honest card. And I think my first handicap they were going to give us was about 14, and it immediately got revised. So yeah, when you go and shoot 106 in your first tournament.
Kev's still not filling them correct cards, are you, Kev?
Yeah, so that's where it all started. And I think my first handicap, if I remember, was around 28 or so. Yeah. And I'd only been playing golf 3 or 4 years, probably, like with a club membership at the point when we went to Myers School. So it was all still fairly quick.
What was you playing off when you went to Myers School? I can't remember.
I was about 7 or 8.
Was you?
I thought you were lower me. I thought you were off 2 for some reason.
No, I definitely wasn't. I was working at Slaley Hall, so I didn't get a scratch or so till I was near 20. Because of my score and being down that way, I didn't play a lot of tournament golf. And it's very much like what Scotty was saying. You would play a lot of golf, a lot of practice, but not a lot of it was around club golf. So getting me handicap down wasn't really a focus. So I never really played a lot of county golf.
Weren't you throwing any of your scorecards in off the collegiate tour, no?
they did some of them. I'm sure some kids put them in as well. They couldn't have qualified. They should have been non-qualifiers all day long.
Why?
Well, the court didn't have an official standard scratch or anything.
I'll be fair, the only reason I never threw mine was because I was getting 0.1 every time, but that's another story. That
you threw in your good cards.
Of course.
Yeah, no, I didn't put in any of the collegiate ones. I don't know if some of the guys did, but no.
Yeah. Speaking about Myers School then, obviously talk us through your experience there, how you went through Myers School, what you thought of it, how it helped you golf, how it didn't help you golf, and what
Myers School absolutely was... In terms of golf and education, was the best time of my life so far, and I'm sure you'll agree. Some of the memories we could sit all day and go along memory after memory.
This is why I thought you were off two, right? I remember being on the range, and then you were on the mat, and then you took a step backwards to hit off the grass, and then you shanked it into Lee Goodall's ass.
I remember that well. That was so funny. He had a proper bruise as well,
a big mad bruise, like this mic thing.
So why would that make you think I was off too? If anything, that would go the other
way. Because I remember thinking that you were, because I remember you were a good player and you were saying I want to hit off grass and everyone else was just getting on with
With them raid mats. It must have been a quarter inch range mat on the concrete. It'd give you carpal tunnel syndrome before being session off them, Matt, your wrists were killing. I remember that well. But no, I was nowhere near that when I went to Myers School. But yeah, there was nothing career-wise or education-wise that I wanted to do, and that's what led us to Myers School. I remember with a careers advisor, he was like, what are you interested in? I was like, no subject come to mind. And he was like, well, what are your interests? I was like, golf. So he come back to us with this college at Preston that does golf. It's golf studies, you know, a lot of physical education sort of modules and stuff. So, yeah, so that's how I ended up going there. And but my score, start to finish, it's one of them where it's a bit bittersweet now, because none of us could probably say, well, very few of us, you know, you've got your Chris Hansons, which, you know, where they used it to the absolute most, and they've come out that end of it, and some of them on the main tour or they've had a card, where I didn't treat my score with the full respect it deserved. I mean, we could have had three lessons a week with a PGA Pro at no cost. You know, it's like, you know, all the facilities.
We were too young. You're too young at 16. Yeah. What you want? You should be like mandatory, not allowed to go to my school until you're 20 odd.
Yeah, do you know what it is? Part of us is thinking, I mean, like, was it Andy Greenwood that where he looked about 40 when we were there and that? And it was like,
he was 50, wasn't he?
Yeah, and like, but he had it right. We laughed then. He had it right. Do it later when you're actually going to treat it with some respect.
Yeah, but he was past it, wasn't he? Like 25, you're on it then, aren't you? Now you want to go to golf college and like have a good go.
Yeah, and that's an opportunity. Obviously, we'll never got it again. There's so much good come out of it, you know, stuff that I'm still working with today. But you still think from on everything you would ever need with golf, we had at hand, and we didn't treat it with respect early at that. I mean, certainly in the college, it got a bit more serious going on to Central Lancashire, even though we're still based at Myers School. But then even then, I can't really say I give it everything I should have, and I don't think many people can.
No.
I moved for the accommodation. I moved in, well, first year I stayed on campus. Second and third year were in Preston Town Centre. And yeah, so again.
That helped you golf, didn't it?
No. Like kicking the arse from the student union. No, it didn't help us at all. And like, so, you know, you're missing lectures. You know, your assignments are getting in late, half-hearted, and, you know, it wasn't. So it's a bit of a regret in many ways.
Mate, I said in one of the first episodes, didn't I, Loco, where I said, Myersco is literally a runway to be a professional golfer.
100%.
If you just put your fucking blinkers on.
It's a better platform to be a PGA pro or a tour pro than the PGA offer through the PGA degree and working at a golf club. You know, and you had all the advice. Rick Daniels, we'll all agree, he was amazing in the time we were there. Definitely. His knowledge and everything that he handed to us, to our disposal for learning, for experience, you know, getting to do scoring for the main tour. We've still got pictures of me, Lee Goodall and Kev asleep behind one of the scoreboards offside one of the greens.
It went with.
Yeah,
that must be a normal thing for these two, because we went back a couple of years later, didn't we? And the exact same thing happened, side of 17, Kevin Lee had asleep for the whole day, and I'm sweating my bollocks off trying to get all the scoring done on my own. He still took the wages at the end of it as well.
Yeah. That was the Women's British Open, there.
Wasn't it? Remember that?
The Weetabix. Is that Birkdale?
Was that Birkdale? Yeah.
Brilliant. No, so, yeah, and that's the thing. It's left some amazing, priceless memories, but in terms of education and qualifications, and you know, we could probably get more out of it that we didn't. No regrets with it.
There's no probably about it. We definitely got more out of it than what we
definitely
did.
Could have got more out of it.
Yeah, because even when you go back, even things like teaching you how to practice properly, giving you the putting routines that you need, the three footers, the whole 53 footers before you leave. And do you know all this type of stuff that you wouldn't really do on your own, would you? But when you're in that classroom environment, you're challenged.
One of the modules was professional practice. It's like, it's in the title.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so.
You're given all the opportunities.
Yeah, it's like you just said there, Wayne, you've got access to coach three times a week, probably five times if you wanted. You've got
putting green,
outdoor putting green, 9-hole golf course, a range. Like a chipping green, which was illegally placed by the canal, which we talked about on Scotty's episode.
I've seen that there in the caravan park to the left.
But like, you've got it all there, but then they go and stick a load of girls in a pub on site and fucking fuck your chances up.
Exactly. Was it the stumble in?
The stumble out.
The stumble out. Brilliant. Yeah, so So that's the thing. We had it all. It was phenomenal. So, and that sort of, that set us up. It did set us up in sort of a forward career in the golf industry. And for the last 2 years of degree, so at Central Lancashire, I worked out term time at Slaley Hall, which is they had a European Tour event that the British Seniors PGA, the Seniors PGA Championship. So it's a real good venue. But again, that's where it was. It sort of come to a start of realizing that after me degree, it wasn't going to be easy setting a life in the golf industry, because I think a lot of people don't know the start on these paths without really knowing where they're going to go with it. And I didn't. So, and I'm getting this job at a great venue, 0 hour minimum wage, you know, but I still didn't really know where I was going with it. And it, because of the nature of the venue it is, it's very corporate based. So there's not, in terms of actual career golf, there's not really anywhere you can go with it. And that was why I never went down the PGA route, because I never really wanted to be a coach. I never wanted to be a teaching pro. And again, the PGA, in terms of opportunities, is very limited, you know, which we touched on. And now there's 5 times the amount of PGA professionals in the UK as what there is golf clubs. Yeah. So when the PGA are reeling off, graduating year after year, new people through this PGA course, there's where no they're going to go, you
yeah,
know,
no clubs and, to take them.
Getting a head professional job is dead man's shoes. I think Scott Parry's just getting Bramall Park, is it? He's getting the head pro position there, which is great. And he's possibly the first person that I know that's come through all these systems that have actually eventually getting into a head professional position. They're very few and far between. And I think that's when people are going through these paths and wanting to be in the golf industry, they need to maybe do a bit more research and where they're actually going to go at the end of it. Because I think the truth be told, there's not a lot.
Not a lot of opportunities.
Joel, do you know what? Just a little quick one there. What I've said a few times in this professional route, every time we speak about, and we shouldn't really try and promote this more, that these professional routes are designed for people to listen to and go back and be like, ah, so these lads have been there and done that, and now they're this. And we all we talk about is how hard it is, the struggles, the money, the different sides of what you're doing. So, like, what you're saying there is just perfect advice for someone in Myersco, isn't it? When they're coming out, to be like, it's not all going to be easy and rainbows and butterflies, as I've said before.
Yeah.
If you decide to take that route, then there's nothing stopping you from taking that route. You just need to be aware of what's ahead of you. And if you're willing to put that effort in, and you're willing to grind, and you know that it's going to be a tough road ahead, then go for it. And best
of luck. You'd never discourage anyone if they put the hard work and the time and persistence, and of course you can achieve these positions. You know, you can get the assistant role and stay there, work hard for several years into a head position.
Yeah,
you know. But I think even now, when you look at the head pros, I think retainers aren't what they used to be. The demand for coaching over the years. I remember when I was first getting golf lessons, Jack Ord was my local pro, and it was around 25, 30 quid for a lesson. And that was just a municipal course. You know, nowadays with the demand, an assistant coach, an assistant professional, now you're getting a lesson for like £15, you know? So as a coach, then you put that into your income.
Well, it's not like the price of living's going down as well either, because the price of living's going up.
And that's the thing. So it's real tough, and it's tough to make a living, you know, and especially, you know, the price of living is not going to go down with it. So, and I think that's why people need to do a lot more research before they try to go down the professional route. And partly the reason why I'm still sort of in and around the golf industry is because I've sort of took me mistakes well as a, you know, and learned from them. There's been plenty of them.
Talk us through that way, and then so what was it for you? Mm-hmm. Obviously at the point that you've graduated, you're at Slaley Hall. Mm-hmm. Talk us through that route from there and what happens.
So I'd getting me handicap right down, so I was playing county golf, so I'd won a couple of club championships, a couple of county level trophies, so my golf was
where are you at there, what club are you playing?
I won Slaley Hall's club championship.
Oh, you're at Slaley Hall.
I was playing as a member there as well as working there. In Wickham, which was another local golf club, I'd won their club championship. Yeah, so then the county levels, Hadrian's League trophy and the county clubs championship I'd won. So my golf felt good in terms of I still had the eye to want to be a professional, even though I was getting on to 2021. And, you know, you don't appreciate when you're 2021, you've still got a lot of time. you know.
Yeah. You're a scratch golfer at this point, is that right? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I was comfortably a scratch golfer, and then in when I moved to Wickham, we had a few good rounds, a real good season that put me handicapped to +2. And that's when I thought I'm gonna maybe look to give it a go. So it wasn't until 2016. So I'd been playing golf right through this time, just at the club and county. And I thought, I want to give it a go now. I'd sort of done everything in terms of my job. I was working at a great venue and whatnot. So I'd moved job to George Washington, and that was where I turned pro out of. In terms of the industry of golf, was just another hurdle that I didn't really know how tough it was going to be till I tried to cross it, and that was turning pro. And it's a bit of the status of being a professional golfer, sort of when I started playing golf and I went to my school, that was sort of my goal, to have that status. And you know, but when you get it, a lot of people don't really know what they're going to do with it and how tough it actually is. So I turned pro, and one mistake that I will say I made, I turned pro signing away my amateur status at the first day of qualifying. So on that first day of qualifying at the Euro Pro, I was then professional. You know, rather than going through qualifying as an amateur and then you can sign it away at a later date anytime you want. Obviously, you can't return any prize money till you've signed away your amateur status. So that was why I'd done it at first qualifying. And I had a real poor start to trying to qualify. Despite my club golf, I was putting in around level par or under quite comfortably. And as soon as I went to qualifying, you know, it sort of clicked that it's a different level of golf. Courses are longer, the standards better. It's not like going into a county club's championship or anything like that. These guys can play golf, you know. So I had a real poor turn at qualifying. Then, so the first year, I only got to play a couple of events, played around the Northeast, Northwest PGA through invites. And it was tough, so there was not a lot happening. So I had this professional status. Couldn't play club golf, county golf. Couldn't play your June medal. You know, you sign it all away.
What's so interesting there, the word that you use there, status.
Yes.
Because Tom Higson, I'm calling him Scotty, like, but we've got other people listening to these that probably don't know who he is. The lad who we had on two professional routes ago, Tom Higson, he said as well, he turned pro for a status. The exact same word that you used.
Yeah.
That's what it was. There's a level of arrogance.
He said. That's so mad. You know, it's so good.
Yeah.
I love how all these professional routes are like all going into one sort of channel.
Yeah. And it does. And it gets to the point where you've got the status. You realise you can't play club, county, even your June spoon on a Wednesday night. You can't play it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You just can't. And you think, it's not just about signing away to try and, you then can't do all the things that would have you playing golf week in, week out. And it's costly. So as soon as I turned pro and lost that status as my amateur status, you're very limited in what you can play in. And when you do play, it's going to cost you, you know, just a Northeast Northwest PGA, it's going to cost you £100. So entry and so, you know, they're not cheap.
So you can play them the PGA event, even though you're not a PGA pro?
Only through invite.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't qualify for any of the Order of Merits or anything like that.
I see. But you can't you just phone up and book in and say, I'm Wayne Feeney professional, I want to join the PGA.
I think it was purely through if there's space with these events. There's guys there that are wanting to be on these Order of Merits and stuff. But if the space is generally the decent enough to, so if there's space, they'll let you play.
Yeah, Betty will, do you know what I mean?
Well, you're paying for it. So, that's it. And then because it's limited in what you can play in, you've got to just do what you can to keep playing some level of competitive golf. And it sort of come to the point where I had a real fallout with golf sort of back into 2016. And it was like a divorce from this sport that I just loved from being young. So I was no longer working at the golf club. I went two years up until back end of last year, beginning of this year. I didn't pick up a golf club for 2 years, didn't hit a ball.
What do you put that down to, Wayne? Do you think, because it comes across sometimes as in the amateur, you've got different people you can play with at the club, different types of things. And then when it becomes a professional, it does actually become more of a profession. So everybody takes it that much more seriously. Does it become a bit lonely?
I was about to say lonely, yeah?
Yeah, even even in the qualifiers I've been to, you do get a sense, and that's maybe an element that I've still got to sort of focus on and try and handle, because I've never done that. But it does feel lonely, even going to qualifying, going down to Bristol, 3 nights in a hotel. You know, you're going to warm up on the morning, you're having your practice round, you're eating by yourself, going to bed, waking up, warming up, doing your round, going back. It's a very lonely sort of life in that, you know.
You need a caddy, do you, Wayne?
There he goes.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's going to do. I don't know how he's going to do these caddy jobs, you know, Wayne. Because
I have asked every single person to get a caddy for them.
He's not soft, is he? You know what he's after? Looking after his own back pocket, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's it. There you go. There's another cost. You know, all these things where... So we've done a full... Gavin from AGM Golf Media's, who's my management for next year, he's done us a full budget. So basically, through this 5 months, we're speaking to people that are supporting us. And purely, with the fact of the matter is, without that financial support, I wouldn't be able to play next year.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't. I mean...
For hearing that a lot...
Yeah, our full budget to play the full season is around 17,000 is what we've sort of budgeted. And that's fairly...
That's an extra $5,000 in there for me to come and caddy the bag.
To get the bag, 22 then.
But it's interesting you should say that, because when we had Sean Tandrow, another professional on earlier on, and he said that he won a Euro Pro Tour event, and he still only come out with 15,000 for the whole year.
So he won two.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about that. That's going to cost 17, but even with a win, you're only getting 15 back. So is there much profit to be made at those tours? No.
The one thing people need to understand is that the Euro Pro Tour is not there to... If people are just going to sit on the Euro Pro Tour because they want to make money, they're in the wrong place. It's not a tour. That's not what it's there. It's a great platform for people that have a genuine sort of ability or want to try and progress to the challenge tour, to the main tour. You know, it's great for that. Other than that, you look at the order of merit. It's like you said, that's a great example. Guy's finished the season at around 15 grand. He's kicking well into the top 20, 15 in the order of merit. With that kind of return, and he's probably lost money at the end of it. If he's played every tournament, there's a good chance he's actually lost money that season. So it's all well and good. Then that's why people can manage it. If they've got good support, good sponsors that'll cover the outgoings, the costs, then that £15,000 is a return which can go towards their living expenses and, you know, your basic living.
So what pressures does that take off you then in your preparation and things? Is that a big deal? Because I know there's some people, and what we've heard is that some people will work all winter just to play the first five or six events, and if they don't do well, then they will just think, right, well, I'll have to go and earn some more money to go again because they haven't got that support. Yeah, having that support, what does that do for you?
It's massive. It's the pressures of it. And I think the last time I went to qualify, it was self-funded. That was a massive pressure, you know. It's golf. As soon as you're playing, counting the money that's going out to coming in, it's the worst foot you can set off on, thinking about the door. And so not having that pressure lets you just focus on your golf, being the best golfer you can and shooting the best score you can. You know, it's like... You look at the order of merit, and I know it's when you look at the European Tour and the PGA Tours, where a put on 18 can cost them anywhere from 5 to 20 grand, depending on where they're sitting in the table. Obviously, the Euro Pro is a lower scale, but it does make a difference when you finish in 5th or 10th. You know,
Tom Higson was saying, like, he gets pissed off with the commentators because he's like, you got a 3-foot putt and to win the tournament, and it's big pressure. He's like, that's not pressure. He's still getting 750 grand to come second. He said, pressure is making a 3-foot putt to, you don't know, that's to make you the cut, to make the money, to get the petrol home or to feed the kids or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Literally, Tom's dead right there. That's like, you're playing for your living. We're still there playing for living. We're not playing for luxury money.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and that's one thing. And it's a good level of golf. You look at the qualifier at Luton Hoo was won with 20 under.
But how many rounds?
Oh, sorry, not Luton Hoo. It was the Oxford and the two courses that they played the final qualifier on. I can't remember what the two courses were, but it was three rounds of golf, and he won it with like 20, 21 under or something. Like,
yeah,
you know. So, and to be fair, there was some
stick them on the European tour and let everyone else have a go. Like,
well, that's the thing. The standard's not going to be massively far away from some of the guys that are sat on the European tour. The top guys on the Europro tour will still hold their own against them guys without a doubt. It's just but in like Scotty. Done great in qualifying. I think he was still 8 or 9 under and sort of still just sat comfortably sort of just outside top 10 or so. Yeah. And that's what 8 under for 3 rounds of golf.
Yeah.
Tough school. Tough. So, and that's the pressures and the things people don't account for when they say they want to be a professional golfer. It's great. It's doing something I love. But in terms of living, still at 33, it's by no means settling. Your lifestyle is not settled by any means. But on the flip side, it's difficult or borderline impossible to have a career elsewhere in another industry to fund play golf, because you need that time where you're working to make money. You need that time to be practicing and preparing. And
because the standard's so good.
Because the standard's so good, you can't be... There's very few players that will be able to work a full-time job and then go and hold their own on the Europro Tour.
Yeah.
But Tom was saying that he wakes up at 4:30, was going to Glen Eagles, and he's got his baby as well. And then after work, he was practicing. He wasn't getting home until 11 o'clock at night.
11 o'clock? Oh, I'm committed. I'm not that committed. to be fair, that probably shows. I mean, even through uni, Tom was one of the best ball strikers at that uni.
Yeah,
I've not seen him hit a ball since, but I can imagine he's still hitting as good as what he was then. But you know, but it is. I mean, it's a minimum of a full time job in your preparation, whether you're on the range, in the gym, you know, working on your body, your mind, you know, whatever it be. You know, it's absolutely a full time job to try. So you know, in the fact I've got 5 months to try and prepare to go to the first tournament, which is actually at Luton Hoo in May. We're trying to raise enough through sponsorship and support to allow us to do that. You know,
so talking about the getting the mind prepared and doing things like that. Yeah. What type of team have you got around you? Because obviously the mental side of the game, it's always talked about, isn't it, how important it is to keep your mental strength.
Yeah, it is. We're not working with someone as such, yes, directly on the mind. Steve Bainbridge, who's my coach now, he's Robert Rock's coach on the main tour.
Yeah.
And he's sort of working with me. So we had a program which was due to start this week, actually. To see right through the winter, which was basically, it's going to be a 3-month program of sorting me body, me swing, and then getting into sort of into new year. That's when we'll look at the sort of mental side of the game. So me pre-shot routines, me preparation, me practice, you know, because a lot of the times there will be these tournaments where I have to go and all the things we're working on, we'll have to go and do ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the morning, we're not, you know, it's fair enough. These guys on the main tour have got 3-4 guys with them that are sort of preparing them for these areas. But I'm going to have to go down there and take it all with us to take to the first tee, and all that preparation is going to have to be done beforehand. So the mental side of the game, and that's one thing I've found of why me golf's probably is actually hopefully going to start progressing. And not that I hit the ball better than what I did even 10 years ago, I think my head's in a better place, you know. Certainly on the golf course, your temperament, basic things like your temperament, your routines, you know, you accept you're going to hit bad shots. And it's one thing people, certainly younger, don't understand is golf's not about how good your good shots are. It's how good your bad shots are, how consistent you can be with it. So, and I think that's improved drastically over the years, which has allowed us to...
You've just matured, haven't you?
It's all it is, Kev. Literally, it's just matured as a person, which has allowed us to know. Like the Players Club where I went to qualifying, I looked at the course guide. It was quite a long course. I think it was 7-2, the course. Waterlined for the first 7 holes. So I sort of had in my head, I'll probably sit mid-table in terms of distance for some of the guys there, but I knew there was a lot of inexperience in the field, where half of them are going to play themselves out by the lack of course management, and just having the mental sort of ability to get around the course and know sometimes par is a good number, you know, and you know, sometimes you just got to pick your way around the course. The whole time, I never put a ball in water, which truthfully, that was one of my goals, to be honest. Keep the ball in play. You know,
when you're talking about so much water, it's a good goal to have, isn't it? Because those penalty shots could be the difference between making it and not making it.
Yeah,
the only reason he didn't want to put a ball in the water was to keep his budget down for the 16th.
That was also that, Kev, to be fair.
Yeah.
Poor V's aren't cheap these days.
I would say £3.50 on the ball, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one thing now, not working at a golf club. I've started to realise I've had to pay for balls myself. I keep my ball in play. You know, if I can putt well, keep the ball in play, make 2, 3, 4 birdies around, then to be fair, I should be okay to keep around. So to keep it at 72-68, I was really pleased with.
Good going, definitely.
I've had a few scorecards. I don't know if you've seen them. Me and Mark, like 4 birdies, like on Friday, I had 4 birdies last week. Mark had 4 birdies, mm-hmm. but David both days. Do you remember Dave Goscombe?
Of course, I remember.
Yeah, not just saying you remember him. He had both days. He had 4 birdies, but he had less mistakes.
Yeah, that's all it is.
So it's like we can all make the birdies.
Yeah. And if you don't want to be making bogeys, but if you're getting that 4 birdies around consistently, it does give you a little bit of room to still not make silly mistakes. If you hit one in the trees, take your medicine. You may make a bogey, but you've got to allow for it. You know, and there was at no point I went for any sort of red light golf. If it was red or amber, I just didn't go for it. Hey, if you any of these courses you're playing at them distances, if you can hit many greens regularly as possible, you're not going to do much wrong. So keep your ball in play, hit greens.
So talk us about what you mean there by the red and amber and the green.
Yeah, the pin that's on pin positions basically. You know, you've got obviously red would be, you know, if you've got to say a 190, 195 shot into a green, you've got a pin tucked behind a bunker, you know, with five, that's 5 yards on. You know, your percentages of hitting that are pretty low, of hitting that shot to land it. So that to me would be a red flag. An amber one might be something where you've got green to work with, but there may be a hazard or something on that side. You know, a green light is obviously if the pin's middle of the green, nothing really around it, you're just going to go straight at it, and that would be your green light.
Where have you got that?
I'm sure that was my score.
Did you?
It had to have been. I'm sure
you must have been asleep in that class.
Yeah, we must have been asleep in that one. That was absolutely a Maya score thing.
Yeah.
Either red, amber, and green. And that was all it is. And I knew the length of the course, to be honest, that we had pin charts. I was looking more for the yardage to the middle of the green if I hit it happy days. That was it. If I could go around that course and hit 18 greens, you're never shooting. You shouldn't ever shoot over par.
No.
So that was it. And that was just playing real safe golf. You know, if I put myself into a bad position, there was a couple of times. One, I made a par having to go out sideways, you know, but where there may be that chance of a shot forward, but you've just got to take your medicine, you know, and play sensible golf. Don't take risks. Don't take chances in that. And that sort of, that definitely was my head over my ability that got us through qualifying.
Well, so you're getting to obviously the standard that you're at. When you're saying you're at +2, you must have serious confidence 100 yards and in. That's what most players at that standard have. You've always got that chance to make par, haven't you?
Yeah. I don't know how much they look into stats with the sort of this level of tour, but if you do look, the top half of the order of merit will all tee the green, hit the ball the same. They'll all be great. It'll be the guys that are higher up are the ones that, you're right, are 100 yards and in, dialed in. Your wedges, you're putting, and that's where it's all made. I know it's that cheesy little line of drive for sure, putt for door.
Yeah,
it genuinely comes to it with this. Anyone that's dialed in with the wedges, 100 yards in will sit well on the tour.
So
it's all these little things which sort of I'm trying to get in place to be ready to go next year. So hopefully. Because if I don't sort of sit on it to buy merit, take a card for 2022, you know, it's difficult to say at 33, am I just going to go through it again? Go through qualifying, same preparation, look for funding, you know, it's not an easy cycle, you know, to...
Yeah, but at the same time, you shouldn't be putting... You can do it next year, do you know what I mean? You shouldn't be putting that much pressure on yourself to be thinking, this is my one and only shot, like Eminem.
No, absolutely not. You're right. It's, again, I will just take a tournament by tournament, prepare the best I can. And Steve Bainbridge, he's amazing. By the way, he's next European tour player himself. He's really, really well experienced. So
yeah.
I think I've got a good team around us with Gavin, me management, Steve, me coach. You know,
Kev, so there's
a lot of work. Kev the Caddy. Yeah, so there's a lot of work certainly that I need to do, especially only being back sort of a year after taking a bit of time off. But I knew that, again, that was if I got this... if I got through qualifying, then I've got some time to sort of put that right and hopefully make a few good appearances, because the prize money's slightly better. It's getting better coverage through the media. So,
yeah,
you know, hopefully if I can sort of sit there and open some opportunities. And it is there's the goal of, you know, where do I want to go now? You know, I've still got goals that I would like to play a better level of professional golf, you know. My goal and life dream at the minute is to play one European tour event. That's one thing that I want. I'm very set on that.
Very reachable as well, though, isn't it?
Realistically, yeah, there's still chances. There's like the British Masters have local qualifying, you know, so all these things extra, which are going to cost next year, that I want to be doing. And that is my ultimate goal to play one game, one round.
What is it like? Two or three good rounds and you're in the Open?
But yeah, it's literally that. Regional qualifying is not, the scoring is never phenomenal. That gets to regional. No. It's final qualifying when there's a field of 120 tour pros with three spots. That's a tough school because, again, you've got all the European tour players that haven't qualified by merit. That's exactly where they're going to go to try and get their...
It's pressure on them, though, isn't it? So you just go, relax, shoot the lights out through, aren't you? Yeah.
It is, you know, and it's been shown. That's exactly how it can happen. James Robinson, Chris Hansen have all getting into the Open through that route.
Yeah.
You know, where there would have been the seasoned European tour pros with real pressure that they haven't qualified through the tour and through their merits. So, yeah, so all these little things, there's elements like that where it does give actually less pressure because of the level we're going in from Euro Pro. And
it's interesting what you say there, Wayne, about age as well, because we do our reviews of the golf on our normal weekly podcast. And this year alone, you've got three fellas who've won on the PGA Tour over 40. You've got Stuart Sink.
Yeah.
You've got Brian Gay. Martin Laird's 37, Garcia. I know, obviously, Garcia is another level major champion.
Yeah, he's just won on the European Tour.
What was his name? Yeah, he won at the. I can't think of his name. I know you mean.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago, he won. That's going to bug us now. I feel bad. I can't remember his name. But yeah, he was. I mean, it was 13 years since his last win.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so he's very much a season pro, and I think it's one thing I've sort of got my head around in terms of me playing golf, that if I conduct myself right now and maybe and do something, that I've still got a bit of time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not by no means at the end of the line in terms of playing golf. Cause you look at it and I think it was that spell where you had your Spieth, your Justin Thomas and all these coming through like 19, 20, you know, and it sort of give people this perspective that golf was now becoming a young guy's game. And I think that maybe that was just a bit of a spell, but it's still not like that. You can still, if you get a good ability, I think you can still very much hold your own on a main tour at early 30s to 40, definitely.
Isn't it? It's just, as we've just said about the older winners, and then what you've just said about the wedges, 100 yards and in and stuff, that's not just that level. That's from kids up to the European Tour major standards. It's not about the driver at all.
It's not they'll still have a pretty handsome average, but through technology, it'll be hard not to have a 290 to 300 average on your driver, you know. But golf technology is that good, ball technology is that good, you know. Everyone's getting it out, everyone on any of the tours are getting it out to that kind of them kind of distances. So that's when it does just become down to the shorter sticks,
Yeah, and it's interesting just going back what you said there about Spieth and Thomas coming through at that age. I've spoke about this in the past. They get it a lot easier than the English lads and the British lads because they get a four-year free trial through college pretty much where they play against the top-level athletes through the American Scholarship Program. Whereas obviously we've spoken about Meyer School and what we've got at a younger age from 16 to 18 and then so on to college, but they're competing against each other and then they're going from college onto the Corn Ferry or the web.com tour as it went and they're going through it together where it seems over in the European side, we're just handicapped as low as you can, get your card, go and play. Mm-hmm. And it seems every year, I've never looked at it, but I imagine if you looked every year, there'd be a different group of lads having a go and then dropping off and then having a go and then dropping off.
Yeah.
There's no.
And it'd be interesting to see, just on that note, what you're saying, be interesting to see with a new handicap system. Handicaps are going to be colossally lower to be getting into some major amateur tournaments and stuff. Certainly the British amateurs. I remember when I got the plus one, I got balloted out for the British amateur. Wasn't anywhere near. And I think with this new handicap system, it's going to bring the score, your handicap right down to qualify and get into the, so certainly on the amateur ranks. Normally, even a plus two, to turn pro and hold it, it's not low enough.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Hansen, was he plus four, plus five?
Yeah, I think when so,
he,
yeah.
When he was silly low. And granted, he's had a tour card. He had a tour card for a few years in store, but that just shows how good these guys actually are.
Speaking of someone being off plus five or plus two, Holter turned pro four. So it just shows you hard work beats talent. Mm-hmm. That's what we said on this podcast.
Absolutely. Hard work absolutely beats talent in that. And you know, I've always learned over the years, and it took me a long time to accept sort of the way I swing the club. Very strong grip, short backswing, you know, and I had quite a few coaches and people telling us, you know, you lengthen your backswing, loosen your grip sort of thing. And not really realising that I would have comfortably been able to get to the ability I'm at now with how I swing it.
Yeah.
You know, and that just comes down to hard work. Everyone swings the club different.
Well, look at Bubba Watson. Look at Jim Furyk, Matty Wolf.
Matt Wolf. He's everything I love about golf. It's just he's took what he's got and what works for him, and he's phenomenal with it. You know,
perfected his craft, hasn't he?
Well, even DeChambeau. DeChambeau's changed his set to suit the swing. All the same size irons. Yeah. And big fat grips and stuff. It's whatever works for you, isn't it? Individual game at the end of the day.
What do you think of Bryson, Wayne? What do you think of Bryson?
I was just going to come to that. I know the USPGA hit that he won the US Open, but and there was a couple of comments I'd seen that he's making a mockery of golf. Was that Matthew Fitzpatrick?
Yes.
What a foul comment. He's not really. He's played everything within the rules of golf. You know, within the restrictions for in terms of driver lengths, loft, and he's made it work for him. I think in terms of physics, does it not make perfect sense for your irons to have one swing? You know, I think he's used basic physics in that sense to favour him. Then with his driver, you know, what is his driver 4 degrees or so? It's silly low, his driver.
Yeah,
you know. Hit it on the up at that swing speed, the ball's going to go further. You know, it just naturally will.
Well, so, like we've said there a few times, he's not winning every fucking week, is he?
He's not winning every week. He does. I think there's areas of the game he's got a massive advantage, certainly with his distance. He's not winning every week, but I just love how he's pushed the limits of what's there. And truthfully, I don't know why it hasn't been done before.
Yeah,
you know, we've all learned the physics and the technology behind the golf ball. We all know how the club, you know, what generates distance. You know, your ball speeds, your swing speed, your launch angles. So I'm surprised it hasn't actually been done before.
Yeah,
Bryson's actually come out and done this and hitting 4 degree drivers on the up with over 200 ball speeds.
Ball
and stuff.
Speed, yeah, he's trying 215 now, isn't he?
215. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, I was laughing at Kev's video, but Kev was the DeChambeau swing. What was it, 160? Kev, good effort though.
I just looked at Locke and went, I just don't know where I'm getting an extra 40 mile an hour from in that.
I think I'm at about 165 ball speeds. You know,
prove it then.
Well, it's one thing we're working on, Kev. Give us time. But that's 215, where's that 50 mile an hour difference coming from?
I know.
Like, it's just not there. Like, so it is, it's obscene what he's doing, but you can't knock him for it. And I think if people are going to complain, and certainly if the USPGA and, you know, the RNA or whoever wants to complain about it, the only way to do that is to put a, if you had a limit on how, on the loft of a driver, say 8.5 is the lowest you can loft a driver to, then that will reel that in. But he's doing it with,
look, he's doing it at 4 degrees. It's not like, so that 4 degrees is there. Why doesn't, if you can put it at 0 degrees, like, what does that do? Can you do that? Do you know what I mean?
It's not like, well, it obviously just generates the optimum spin rates, launch angles, everything at that distance. I mean, there is actually no limit to how low you can. So I'd imagine at some point somebody has been ridiculous enough to try a 0 degree loft driver, whether it's actually worked on. I mean, I would do. I think it is hitting the deck 6 foot in front of us if I tried it.
I can't even hit a 10.5 degree driver.
Look, I was on eBay looking at them, one of them ladies flex 12.5ers.
So I do. I love what he's doing with the game. I love how he's. It's all well and good when you've got the money to probably ruin 20 sets of golf clubs to find your perfect one, like, but. But yeah,
like, like you said, then Fitzpatrick come out and said something about Bryson. He's like, I could go to the gym and I could do this and I could start hitting it hard. Go on then, you little toothpick. Do you know what I mean?
Well, do you know what it is? If it's, join them. It's
exactly. Yeah, go on then.
If he can do it. Yeah, fair enough. They probably can't generate the swing speeds Bryson is, and I don't know if that's a bit of a jealousy sort of streak in that. But that's the thing. You can do it. Go and do it. You know.
Yeah.
And I think, To suggest changing the ball technology and that sort of thing to reel in the distances they're hitting the ball is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I think to do that. But the thing is, for now, I've always, the golf technology is sort of maxed out. Given the restrictions they've got, it's as good as it can be.
Yeah.
So it's only going to improve by doing what the likes of Bryson's doing, you know, to hit the ball purposely, hit it straight. And like you said, it's not like he's running away. He's not doing like a Tiger in 2001. You know, he's not winning every tournament. You know, he's fair enough. It was a class performance in the US Open for him to win, but he's not doing it week in, week out.
We said a couple of times, you've still got to get the ball onto the green and get the ball in the hole.
You do.
Distance doesn't do that for you.
It doesn't. Distance isn't going to put the ball in the hole. And then if that was the case, half the long drive tour could just be sat on the PGA.
Yeah,
exactly. And then the week after, there was, I think it was 3 reachable par fours or 2 reachable par fours and a couple of reachable par fives in 2, which were like driver wedge sometimes for Bryson. And he was 9 under first round. He's like, here we go again. And then he didn't end up winning.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think he would. I think he come fit. Yeah, exactly. Was 5th or 6th or something. He didn't even, wasn't anywhere near. So it's like, get off his back. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so it's in all, I love what Bryson's doing. So, you know, and to be fair, if I can do it, I'd certainly join him in preparing for next year. But so we'll see how it goes. So, yeah, so there's a few changes certainly in me body weight. Quite brutally, I've been asked to drop some unwanted body fat, you know, get in the gym, improve my flexibility, and that's going to help the work that he's wanted, but I'm going to need to be doing off course to help me swing to hopefully improve what I'm doing on the course. So,
well, that's it. Give us a bit of insight on that then, Wayne. So what is it that you're going to be doing then? Because obviously now we've built the career up. We know where you're going and where you're heading for next year and what you're into. So what work are you going to put into between now and that first tournament?
Yeah, well, for me, Lisa, I'm currently just over 15 stone. I'm trying to drop to 13.5. Again, that's just going to be basically getting rid of any unwanted body fat that I'm carrying around that's not benefiting us in any sort of way. A lot of work on me lower body core and flexibility, because I don't have a real good natural flexibility, so I'm going to have to work hard for that, and that's going to get us the extra turn, because I've always had, like I said before, I've got quite a short backswing.
What are you doing with that? Yoga, or are you doing like specific stretches or what?
Pilates, yeah. Well, pending obviously getting out of this lockdown, that was the plan. So again, like I say, we've had to sort of move it around a bit, so now I'll be focusing on my diet, getting rid of a bit of body fat, doing some Pilates and stretching stuff at home, just in the next 4 weeks before we can start working on the swing. And that's where there's a few swing changes that are going to rely on increased flexibility, which has been allowing me to sort of, because I've got quite a strong grip and a short backswing, I don't have a sort of full turn on play. I'm very up on a steep angle. And then through the ball, I sort of, again, just hold it off because I've got a strong grip. If I release the way, you know, you look at your Adam Scotts and stuff too, I'll be firing it left all day long. So, you know, in the, they're things that Steve's wanting to work on and get changed, because the way I go through the ball, I've got about an inch either side of the ball that'll let me square it up before I'm hit the ball. Waywards, but working on what I'm going to be doing with Steve and increasing my flexibility in these movements is going to allow us to stay squarer through the ball for longer. And that's sort of one of the main things which is going to allow for consistency.
It's exciting though, isn't it? Because obviously you're going to get to a position, aren't you, where you're going to be swinging it like you've never swung it before if all that goes to plan, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it. And I was really excited for the prospect of sort of working with Steve and having a real winter program, you know, to work towards for next year. So so I've just got to do what I can in the off period. This lockdown, truthfully, I was devastated. As soon as it came out that it was I knew would have to sort of change things around in terms of preparation. So yeah.
There's not much you can actually do at home, but just by speaking to like your flexibility coach, you can go on YouTube and find all sorts of flexibility videos and all that. So as long as you're staying active and keeping the mind active and not letting the lockdown get to you, swing a few balls in the back garden or whatever.
It is them sort of things, and where we just need to be a little bit mentally strong through this period, because everyone's going through it. Every guy that's going to be teeing it up next year wants to be out there now hitting balls, wants to be making changes that they want to do, you know. And I think I was excited, because when I had my first sort of consultation session with Steve, he sort of talked about the changes he wanted to make and the benefits that would be to me. And I always knew when I'm not swinging it well, it's always because of me timing, because of this strong grip. I have a tendency to hit me bad shot being left. And some of the movements that he's wanting to do to get us squarer for longer through the ball, you know, I was thinking, well, that works well. And then if, you know, and that's the thing. And if there's days I'm not swinging it off, not swinging it well, bit of an off day, it's still going forward.
Because it's important.
It could be like forever. Like I was even thinking about it myself, about just getting a wedge and going to the park like I used to and just flicking a few 58s.
I'll be doing that. Absolutely. I'll be finding the longest.
It's sort of back to basics, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure I can get a wedge up a football field. What's a football field?
I remember not being able to get driver over the football field. I'd be scared to be the football field.
Yeah, I'd probably be pushed to be getting driver. I'm sure there's a few fields that can get a get me wedges up. But yeah,
as you say, but then that's dialing you in. If you foot football's a football goal, you've got 100 yards there, and you just flick a few 58s.
So I will do that. I'll get me bushing out, stick a few poles, cones, whatever I've got at certain yardages, and hit it. You know. We'll be doing what we can, but that's the thing.
You're probably going to be on the news now, aren't you? Getting arrested for being outside.
I've always will do, aye. But I've seen this PT still doing personal training one-on-ones outside. I don't know how they're getting away with that. I don't know if they're just pushing boundaries or treading a thin line to do it. But Steve's been great and sort of worked. He's sort of speaking to a few people because of the Euro Pro. It's a professional sport. You know, it's one of the main tours. So as far as I see, we should be able to practice.
Yeah, definitely. You know,
we should be able to have access to some facility, which the worst of the working on at that. But for now, I can only control the controllable, really, which is...
That's a good mindset to have as well, especially when going into other... Like, that's a good mindset to take forward as well. Like, playing a golf tournament, it's raining, it's windy. You can't control that. Don't worry about it.
That was the thing. It was in match play. That was always my weak point in match plays, because not accepting you can only control you hitting your ball. It's not a game of tennis where you're hitting back to your opponent. You can only control what you do. And I used to spend more time in match play rather than me focusing on hitting good shots. I'd be spending more time willing my partner to hit bad ones. You know,
well, there's nothing worse in match plays where you put it to 10 foot, whoever you're playing against misses the green, they chip in, and then you miss the putt, but you've already given yourself the hole in your head.
Yeah, you have, and that's 100%. That's it, and so you've got to work around these things.
Momentum shifter, they're called, aren't they?
Yeah, that's it. It's been great, mate. Great journey, great story.
It's been great catching up with you and finding out. So.
You know, one more thing I want to touch on there. You mentioned that you fell out of love with the game of golf, almost like a divorce.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So obviously the game of golf knew that you were there and you were with it. I fell out of love with the game of golf, but it was like me falling out with someone that I fancied that I've never even spoke to. Do you know what I mean?
The best way I can explain me getting back into golf, it was like you had this girlfriend when you were 13 and you loved her unconditionally for 10 years and then you just sort of fell apart and it wasn't working and you just had a breakup. And that's what it was for me. It was like a breakup with this thing that I just loved so much. And then getting back into golf it's almost like putting my tail between my legs and telling my ex-partner, I still love you.
Yeah, but mine, mine was sort of the same as that. But my girl never knew who I was or existed. I was just sort of looking at her across the playground.
That's stalking, Ken.
That's it. We're finished.
I want to see that clip on Instagram, Black, by the way, Kev.
It will be. That'll be the first.
Watching from afar.
100%.
Fantastic.
We're going to put a picture of me with binoculars in the bushes with golf up there.
Oh, that's brilliant, Kev. No, so you see, and that's what it was. And now I've sort of kissed and made up with it. And so it's put us on. So I'm excited for next year.
It's
a lot hard work.
Yeah, good to see you back, mate. Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and fingers crossed the next podcast we do will be on the back of a W or some good news with going forward.
Yeah, we've got a couple of people that are going to like play this season, and then we're going to you're coming on as soon as this season's ended. Sort of thing. Let's see how you've got on, do you know what I mean?
Nah, I love what you guys are doing. It's great work, so keep it up. It's good fun.
No, it's great having you on, and we'll definitely have you back on, mate, 100%, and good luck.
Brilliant. I appreciate it, man.
Sounds like you're putting the work in, mate, and we appreciate you coming on and telling us your story and your journey. No good worries.
All right.
Take care, Wayne.
See ya.
See you later, brother.
Cheers, mate. Sure.